Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Happy Saturday. Hey, we're going to take a break this morning from the past few shows where we've dealt with these dire topics: immigration, debt, inflation, wokeness, and DEI. Welcome, Mike Carter.
Hey, great to be here today. I'm kind of excited about the topic today. I'm hoping I can learn something.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to learn in this topic. We've been dealing with tough issues and their economic impact all from a biblical perspective. But now let's do something a little more fun. Let's talk Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. All right. I'm already starting to feel a few years younger, just if I can talk this topic over a dinner with my kids sometime.
Yeah, well, and you know, the kids understand it, I think. I think they do. But, we've done a lot of Economic War Room episodes on this topic. The first one we did was now 3 years ago, episode number 128. But it still seems applicable, and we've got the battle plan here we'll go through. And if people want more information on this battle plan and the full report we did on Bitcoin, it can be found at piratemoneyradio.com/report. That's where more information on this episode 128 from the Economic War Room battle plan. But it's going to be the basis for what we're talking about here today.
That was 3 years ago. Hard to believe. And I should have bought some back then. I think I would have been way ahead. But just to clarify, Bitcoin is not pirate money, is it? Do they have servers on any of these ships or anything like that?
Yeah, no. Bitcoin is different from what we talk about in pirate money. We'll get to that. It's different from central bank digital currencies. And we're not recommending investment ideas. We're not recommending you buy Bitcoin, but we do recommend that you understand it and that you gain more information and learn. It's an opportunity to know what's going on in the world and why it's attracted so much excitement around the world. And we've talked about this with our friend Patrick Byrne. You remember Patrick coming in Economic Order?
I remember Patrick at one of our NSIC events early on talking about blockchain and everything else. He was an Overstock.com director, and I thought, this is a big idea. I need to figure it out. And you know what I did? Nothing, but I should have.
Yeah, Patrick is a brilliant guy. He was a friend of Milton Friedman. He was mentored by Warren Buffett. He founded Overstock.com. He's a controversial guy. You'll see him in the news occasionally. He's not a political guy, but he is a freedom guy, a liberty guy. Mm-hmm. And so he stood up talking about the election integrity of 2020. Even though he wasn't a big Trump supporter, he was trying to let people know that our elections are vulnerable. And you know, he made some good points. But we also talked with our friend Frank Holmes, who is an investor guy, and we've had him on the program talking about Bitcoin. Why? Because people get excited just at the notion. You say Bitcoin, and you can watch people's eyes light up in curiosity.
Yeah, and Frank was talking, I'm trying to remember, he was kind of combining gold with Bitcoin in some type of fund, wasn't he? Did that ever?
Well, Frank Holmes has a lot of gold funds and so forth, but he also had a fund, I can't remember the name of the fund, but it's a specific fund that was Bitcoin technology and infrastructure, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. more than it was just actually owning Bitcoin. And Bitcoin's gotten exciting lately. You know, it reached almost $74,000 a coin. And that was boosted by this halving experiment. They called it halving.
I'm still trying to understand halving, because I thought with halving it would be 70,000. I'd see a big fluctuation in price, and I don't quite understand
it. Like it went from 70. You're thinking a stock split.
I was looking for a deal.
Yeah. Halving, like with an L, H-A-L-V-I-N-G. It's not a halving experience. I wish I had a Bitcoin halving experience like 15 years ago when it first came out. I would like to have it. And then I might be selling it today. I don't know what I'd be doing it with today.
We were talking about it back when, you know, the whole Domino's pizza, all that kind of stuff, but it would never quite fit the normal paradigm of investing from my perspective anyhow.
I wished I'd learned more about it. I wished I'd known then what I know now about what Bitcoin is, how it works, and so forth. But the excitement of the halving, where they literally what that is you work to mine a Bitcoin with computer power. You're solving very complex equations, and it takes a lot of energy. It takes time to do it. And they just said the reward that you got for doing the work yesterday, you get half of today. In other words, it's a half of the reward for doing it, which generates excitement because what it means is there'll be fewer Bitcoin. There are only going to be 21 million Bitcoin ever mined, something like that. But now you have to work even harder to get that next one. Well, at $70,000, people are willing to work harder. I guess it's fluctuated. It's now in the 60 to 70,000.
Well, at least it's not like our education system where we're lowering the standards. They're kind of increasing the standards.
They're raising the standards, yeah. And you know, there's a lot of excitement about this because this Securities Exchange Commission has now formally recognized exchange-traded funds that invest in Bitcoin. The problem with Bitcoin is that you got to get a wallet, and then you got to secure it, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with it. And if you lose your key to that wallet, you know, you're lost. You read about these laptops that somebody had, and they had Bitcoin on them, and somebody recycled them or threw them out, and they're sitting in a landfill somewhere, and you're like,
I'm worth millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars.
I've lost enough of my passwords that alone makes me nervous.
Right, but now what you could do is you can call your broker or financial planner, and you can say, I would like to own a Bitcoin exchange-traded fund.
Interesting.
And the ETFs, here's an article from AP News. New funds will make investing in Bitcoin easier. Here's what you need to know. Nearly a dozen new Bitcoin funds began trading in U.S. markets for the first time, providing increased access to cryptocurrency for everyday investor.
And this was back, just in January of this year, I guess.
Yeah, no, this is a brand new thing for 2024. They approved 11 funds from asset managers like BlackRock. I did say BlackRock. Invesco and Fidelity. The wave of approvals may work in your favor as fund managers seek to attract investors by competing on fees. Besides being a win for the fund managers, the approvals are also a win for the cryptocurrency industry, which needed a victory after nearly 2 years of turmoil, including the failure of several crypto firms, most notably FTX in November 2022. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, that was Sam Bankman-Fried, and he had all that political corruption. And
surprisingly, he still went to jail, even despite some of his friends in politics.
Yeah, he did go to jail.
Yes, he got past the point of no return.
Yeah, so people don't know what Bitcoin is, and so we produced a report with episode 128 in the Economic War Room, and it's titled Cryptocurrency Peril or Potential? And I just want to read a little bit from that report because I think it's important that we have a primer on what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin was introduced to the world as a concept in 2008 by Satoshi Nakamoto. Nobody really knows who he is. That's the named inventor of Bitcoin, although it is actually a pseudonym. We don't know his or her real name. The concept of Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer payments function, skipping the need for an intermediary. Most transactions require at least three parties, the buyer, the seller, and one or more intermediaries. But with Bitcoin, you can just do peer-to-peer. So if I want to pay you something, I don't have to go through a bank or whatever. I can just put it out there and you can take it, Mike, and I could pay you.
So it's an answer for my concern about debanking?
It could be an answer to debanking. It's an answer to the dollar losing value from inflation. It's an answer to a whole lot of things potentially. Think about when you buy something online, you may deal with Amazon or eBay or Overstock or Walmart, but you also deal with a third party for payments like Visa, MasterCard, Venmo, or PayPal. This is peer-to-peer, meaning one person can pay another person. It can be private. It's done on a verifiable public ledger, so everybody sees the transaction, but nobody knows who's doing the transaction. The whole world can agree that the transaction has taken place without knowing who is doing it, and the transaction can take place without using actual money, at least not traditional money. So maybe Bitcoin's money.
Maybe. That's hard for me still.
Yeah, the shared ledger is called a blockchain, and we get into some of the specifics of how that operates in this economic battle plan. But it is an interesting concept. People want to know, how does it work? Well, to get a Bitcoin, you go mine it like you mine gold. But mining is taking your computer and solving a complex equation, being the first to solve it, turning it in, and then they reward you with a Bitcoin, a reward. Well, what happens then? Well, they do these things called halvings. And after you've earned some Bitcoin, they make it harder to get the next one. All right, we're going to talk more about Bitcoin and the potential it might have on your life right after this break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
I'm wondering how many people in our audience have ever bought Bitcoin or used Bitcoin as a currency. What do you think, Mike? You think it's something that just a few people have done, or do you think more and more people are doing it?
You know, I'm not seeing any data in terms of percentage of people that are doing it. It seems like more and more people are aware of it. It would be interesting to see what the adoption rate looks like. But for me, there's still a lot of like things I don't understand about it where I've not been comfortable to pull the trigger yet.
Yeah, that may be our generation. It may be a little bit, you know, that we're used to money being a certain way. And, you know, at Pirate Money Radio, we talk about different forms of money, the uses of money and so forth. Bitcoin is one of those that's out there. So is central bank digital currency. So is pirate money, as mentioned in the Pirate Money book that I wrote.
Pirate money, gold and silver. I understand that. That's easy for me.
Gold doubloons and silver pieces of eight. That's pirate money, but making it useful electronically. Well, Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. It's not the only one. It's the first, but not the only one. But it has 2/3 of the value of all cryptocurrency. So it is the dominant cryptocurrency. Do you remember when Bitcoin first emerged?
I remember with the story of the Domino's pizza delivery and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was actually a Papa John's pizza, but okay. Yes.
All right.
It was May 22nd, 2010. And I remember that date because that's my father-in-law's birthday. May 22nd, 2010. Now, he wasn't born in 2010. He was born in 1940. So he turned 70 and Bitcoin came out.
And I remember thinking, I should just buy one of those just to say I have it. I should have done that.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to buy it at the time. And I was like, oh, okay. I was busy.
Yeah. You know how much that Papa John's pizza actually was two medium pizzas. And you know how much they paid and how many Bitcoin they paid for that?
I thought it was two Bitcoin. Wasn't it two Bitcoin total?
It was 10,000 Bitcoin.
It was 10,000.
10,000. Okay. That means that the price of Bitcoin was fractions of pennies. Yes, at the time. Here we are literally 14 years later, and Bitcoin has been as high as $73,700, almost $75,000 per coin. So this developer wants to prove that Bitcoin could be used to transfer value, buys two medium-sized pizza for 10,000 Bitcoin. That means that those pizzas cost, almost $500 million combined, over $500 million combined. I mean, a lot of, if you cash that 10,000 in today, you would get $600 million.
Wow.
Approximately.
Wow. I hope that pizza franchisee kept it.
No, you're pretty sure that they didn't. But that's a famous story. It's called Pizza Day, May 22nd. And now let's walk through the economic battle plan that we pulled together. And this is a battle plan that you can get more information about at piratemoneyradio.com/report if you want to get more information on this. But I'll read a little bit from page 6. What is Bitcoin money? Let me pull that out and tell you, is Bitcoin money?
Yeah, you've talked about that a lot. What is money? Those three things.
Yeah, it's a store of value, a unit of account, and a medium of exchange. And if you use that definition, Bitcoin is clearly a form of money. We know that it was used to buy those two pizzas. So it can be useful as a store of value in that it's worth a lot more than it was then. So it kept its value. It's a unit of account. You could price the pizzas in Bitcoin, and it's a medium of exchange. Both parties were able to exchange using Bitcoin. It's a type of money. There's no question about it. Now, what can you do with your money? Well, there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, or you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. Actually, that should be AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. Sprint's gone. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. Now, Bitcoin as money could be used, right, to pay for your cell service.
Yeah.
Or it could be used to buy your groceries.
Sounds like I could pay for my cell service for the rest of my life if I would have bought it the right time.
Yeah, if you'd bought it at the very beginning. Yeah, those two pizzas. I hope every slice was worth, you know, what's that worth? $50 million per slice or something. I hope they were all good. But then the question is, so it's useful as money, but is Bitcoin an investment? I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? Don't we wish we had bought that? Don't we wish we'd invested in Bitcoin?
Yeah, I know if I invested in it, I would have a hard time spending it as money when we see the value jump up that much.
Well, here the question was, if Bitcoin is money, can it also be an investment? Straight from the economic battle plan that we put out 3 years ago, the answer may well be yes. If you bought a Bitcoin for a fraction of a penny, it's now worth $60,000, it certainly would seem like a good investment. But here's the question. In the past, it looked good. Will it be a good investment going forward? What do you think?
I have no idea. The skeptic in me says, if it's not real, if I can't see it, it's not tangible, I get cautious.
Yeah, no, they're legitimate questions, and we do not give advice on this radio program. That's not what we're here for. We give information. We give education. If you want to make an investment, you need a good financial advisor. You should do your own research if you're an independent investor. We're not recommending Bitcoin. We're not recommending to avoid Bitcoin. What we are is just trying to educate, hopefully having a fun and entertaining program as we learn something new.
Well, speaking of fun, if it was between should I hold a few paper dollars or try and get a Bitcoin or a part of a Bitcoin, they're both kind of like vaporware to me right now. So I'm like, I might take my chances on the Bitcoin.
Yeah, you might. You know, the problem, it's hard to be both good money and a good investment. You want money to be a stable holder of value. Bitcoin's gone up. Is it a stable hold? Has it retained its purchasing power? Like gold and silver have historically, they haven't really appreciated. The dollar's just gone down in relation. Right. They've just maintained their purchasing power. What was it that we saw about the house priced in gold?
Oh, yeah. Home priced in gold. I mean, you look at the average price of a home in the 1960s versus average price of a home today, what it cost in dollars, going from about $14,000 up to $400,000. What it cost in gold, you can almost get two homes for the same price in gold.
Yeah, it's held its value, basically. Yeah. It's gone up a little bit, but it's held its value. So here's the thing. If you're going to make money, the Federal Reserve had the three things that it had. I would add another thing. I would add stability. That's an important characteristic of money. Bitcoin has not been that stable. It's moved up in price over time, even despite the fluctuation. It could be viewed as a speculative investment, maybe more than it could be viewed as true money at this point. If we adopted the current Bitcoin as it is today, as our monetary system, we would be facing massive deflation because 10 years ago, two pizzas cost 10,000 Bitcoin. Today, that same 10,000 Bitcoin would buy 30 million pizzas. Mm-hmm. So that would be a deflationary environment. I'm not sure I want Bitcoin as my primary currency that I transact in because people hold on to it, hoard it. They wouldn't spend it. Just like you said, would you be willing to spend it? So I'm not sure it's exactly money. And it's got some risk factors. Let me read from pages 9 and 10 of the same battle plan in terms of risk factors. The two big risks are government control and new crypto innovation. Bottom line, what that means is, do you think governments really like Bitcoin?
I don't think they like Bitcoin, but they've not done much with it yet. Why is that?
Well, they've actually done quite a bit behind the scenes. You don't see it. They haven't impacted Bitcoin itself, but they've impacted the people that make it easy to get and obtain Bitcoin. They've made it very challenging to get regulatory approval for things. So, you know, they've dragged their feet for a long time. And I'll read why. And this is from the report, the battle plan. Governments like to control the money supply, and they also like to keep close tabs on who has what. Bitcoin structure goes around that. So there's a very real risk that the government will view Bitcoin as a threat and try to shut it down. In fact, Treasury Secretary and former Fed chairwoman Janet Yellen has warned that the misuse of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin is increasingly a problem. She did say cryptocurrencies have promise. So what does she mean? Well, governments point out that to the fact that criminals and terrorists use Bitcoin because it's anonymous, and that could well serve as a reason for any government to further regulate Bitcoin. If you strip away that piece of it, privacy, doesn't it lose investment appeal? And if the government wants to regulate, might they also want to replace? And this is where we get into central bank digital currencies, where governments want to create their own version of Bitcoin.
Right.
How do people feel about that, Mike?
Yeah, I'm caught between two evils here. One is this vaporware. I don't know who regulates or does it. The other one, the government, which I've not seen them have a great track record of success.
Well, central bank digital currency scares me for two reasons. One, it's limitless supply of money. They just add a zero on a computer somewhere, and they've created $1 trillion or $10 trillion or $250 billion, and they can just continue to create money. And the second one is they can monitor every single transaction that takes place. Bitcoin is different from central bank digital currency. It's different because it's private and it's limited.
I do like that.
Yeah. And it's different from pirate money because pirate money would be offered by a state. And if you want to learn more about pirate money, you learn more from piratemoneybook.com for more information. But it is issued by a state, not federal government. It's not a third party that could be shut down. It's totally constitutional. It's based on gold and silver that you transact electronically, but there's real gold and silver at the heart of it. Have you figured out what's at the heart of Bitcoin?
No, that's the part that makes me most nervous. I can't see it. I can't touch it. I know that it's out there, but I don't really understand the process or the guide rails that it has. And while that has some great things from a liberty standpoint, it also has some things that cause me to say, well, I'm not quite sure about it yet.
Well, the blockchain is real. I mean, it's real technology. It's cool technology. It can be applied a lot of different ways. But when you peel back the onion on Bitcoin, do you have something at the center of it? What I don't want to be caught with is the emperor has no clothes. We all think there's clothes there until the little boy comes around and says there's nothing there. I don't think that's the case with Bitcoin. By the way, I'm a big fan of cryptocurrency. I think they're revolutionary. I think it's decentralizing finance. I think there's a lot of promise for it. But yeah, it's different than pirate money. I think it's a creative potential investment of enormous risk and enormous opportunity, but I don't necessarily see it as actual money.
Yeah, the investment side to me is intriguing, especially with the record of success that we've seen out there now. Does that mean I'm coming at the high? I don't know.
Yeah, well, the price fluctuations can be intense. It's a $1.16 trillion market. Here's a good question I'm going to ask that we'll cover after the break. Could Bitcoin possibly be the mark of the beast, or would that be central bank digital currency? We'll be right back.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Hey, we're talking with Mike Carter. Hey, Mike, remember my friend Eric Davidson, best man for my wedding, really cool guy, finance professor at Baylor, hotshot, CFA, he's got a PhD. Also, he was the head of all investments, like chief investment officer at Wells Fargo, brilliant, brilliant guy. And, you know, we ended before the break talking about his Bitcoin, the mark of the beast. And Eric actually did do what we didn't do. He bought some Bitcoin and he's prospered.
That's why he's
nicely
got his doctorate degree, I guess.
Yeah, but he also told me this one time. He said, Kevin, I'm so afraid I'm going to take the mark of the beast. He's a Christian. Why would you do that, Eric? Why would you take the mark of the beast? You can read in the Bible. He says, because I wouldn't know that's what I was taking. And I said, but why would you do it? I mean, you're going to just sign up and take it? And he said, nope, I'm afraid I'll get an email that says, click here to get some frequent flyer miles along with this great new way to pay or something.
Yeah, I could definitely see how that happens. And we're not in any way saying this is the mark of the beast, but we're seeing technologies. We're seeing the way people pay for things. We're seeing money change. And that sets up that question, though. Where's this going? There's control. Is some of this new technology going to lead to that where they can control what you say, do, unless you have that mark or that kind of money?
Yeah, no, I would go. Cryptocurrency is the opposite of the mark of the beast because it goes away from control. Mm-hmm. It's liberty-minded. But central bank digital currencies, those are a little scarier. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to have a high enough social credit score to be able to buy something. Or maybe you get your CBDC card and you go to buy a cup of coffee and they say, well, you know, your cholesterol is too high, you don't need caffeine, or you had already two cups of coffee today, or maybe you've spent too much on gasoline this month and we're just going to cut you off because it's a use license.
And they're saying that out loud. It's not like that's something that's being implied here. They're saying that's the beautiful part of a central bank digital currency, the ability to control.
That's right. No, and it's a government basis. So that sounds a little, the mark of the beast in the Bible talks about how you have to take this mark and you would not be able to buy or sell without it. That seems a lot more like central bank digital mm-hmm. currency to me. Mm-hmm. But back to Bitcoin. The other question is it that means of control? No, I think it's a means of liberty. Here's the question. Is it a Ponzi scheme? People have asked that. And what do you think?
I tend to think that it's not, although I don't know who's behind the screen. That's the part that makes me nervous, but that's probably kind of the beautiful part of it as well.
Yeah, all right. So Ponzi schemes do have one thing in common with Bitcoin. The common element is that the price depends on finding the next buyer. But, you know, that's true in almost every piece of economic activity. It's certainly less of a Ponzi scheme than our unbacked paper money and a printing press. Bitcoin's limited. There are only going to be 21 million ever mined. So it's kind of hard to do a Ponzi scheme when you put a limit there. I don't believe mm-hmm. it's a Ponzi scheme. But another concern, though, is the number of cryptocurrencies that are available. Guess how many cryptos there are out there?
Ethereum, Bitcoin. Up with them. They got those ones with like little animals and stuff on them and all
Doge
that kind of stuff.
Dogecoins and all that.
That's what hurts me in terms of understanding this industry. I'm like, all right, help me separate the legitimate from the less legitimate.
Well, at the end of 2013, there were 50 different cryptocurrencies. By the end of 2014, the number had grown to 500. Today, and there in 2024, there are over 10,000 cryptocurrencies in circulation. So that's
now, somewhere in there could be a Ponzi scheme.
There could. And the fact that you could have maybe the scheme is the creation of all new ones. Yeah. Will Bitcoin retain its value because it was first? Maybe. I think it's got the highest likelihood.
They got the market share. It seems to be the most legitimate.
It does. But then the newer versions are maybe technologically more advanced. Mm-hmm. And so you got that argument going back and forth. So should you consider it an investment? Well, I'll tell you, two great investors that I followed for a long time, Warren Buffett and Jamie Dimon, they're both very wary of Bitcoin. Here's a headline from Fortune magazine from March. It says, Jamie Dimon doesn't care if Bitcoin hit a record high, but he will defend people's right to buy it like he'll defend your right to smoke a cigarette.
I thought he came out against it, though, at some point. Was there another headline where he was saying something directly against it?
Well, it's pretty strong against it. Yeah. Smoking cigarettes kills you. It's pretty strong against it. But he's saying as long as it's legal and available, he believes in free markets. And as long as it's legal and available, you ought to have the right to buy it as a personal choice.
You know, yeah, I thought there was something where I read where he wanted to eliminate it. Maybe he'll defend your right to buy it, but then I thought he said he wanted to see that eliminated.
Yeah, he's made several statements, never really favorable, but this one I think is a good statement. He sees it as potentially dangerous. Now, I've talked to, and you've talked to, legislators. We've mm-hmm. gone into the states talking about transactional gold and silver, and I'll run across a legislator and he'll say to me, oh, I'm glad this isn't Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And they'll say that, and I'll say, well, what do you have against Bitcoin? It isn't Bitcoin. You're exactly right. Transactional gold and silver, pirate money, is real gold and silver that's just traded electronically. But Bitcoin is a whole other animal. But what do you have against Bitcoin? He says, well, I'm afraid people are going to buy it and then they're going to lose their money. And I look at him and I say, now, don't you have a lottery in your state? You're selling lottery tickets by the state and you think that's okay, but you don't think Bitcoin's okay. The payoff on Bitcoin, 100% of the people that bought Bitcoin when it came out are ahead.
Yeah.
100% are ahead
that
bought it and have held on to it. Those that bought lottery tickets, 99.99999% of them lost everything in it. Well, there is a potential Ponzi scheme here, not because of the nature of Bitcoin, but people taking advantage of it. Here's an article that came out just recently. FBI arrests man for running alleged $43 million crypto trading Ponzi scheme. He's collecting money from people, claiming he's going to put it into cryptocurrencies, and he spent his $1.7 million of investors' money on gambling debts, $400,000 on ArtDirect, and his kids' private school tuition. So yeah, there can be Ponzi schemes made out of just about anything, including cryptocurrencies. That does not mean cryptocurrency is a Ponzi scheme itself.
No, and at this point, based on what I'm seeing out there, do I wish I would have bought some or invested in some? Yeah, I wish I would have. Just a little play money and let it ride. But
Are we recommending that for the future? We're not recommending anything for the future. That's a trick question. I know you know the answer. The answer is we don't give advice on this show. It's education. It's information. Hopefully entertainment. You find it fun to learn new things. But Bitcoin is one that's been in the news recently. Here is 11 new spot Bitcoin ETFs, exchange-traded funds to buy in 2024. Before 2024, I'm quoting from this article that was in money.usnews.com. Before 2024, gaining exposure to Bitcoin in a standard brokerage account typically meant choosing between closed-end trusts or Bitcoin futures exchange-traded funds, which futures are risk. They add a whole new level of risk. Here's a chance to buy exchange-traded funds that actually have Bitcoin in them, and you're literally own it without worried about losing your key to your crypto wallet.
Yeah, so the old person in me looks at that and says, oh, that kind of gives me a little bit of peace and comfort. Again, not getting any financial advice, but for myself personally, if I were to do it, this would be looks to me like an easier step. Like, it's got to be regulated. These guys know what they're doing, right?
Well, I don't know if they know what they're doing, but at least you have someone that they're charging you anywhere from, I guess, 0.12% to 1.5%, depending whether it's the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, symbol GBTC, or iShares Bitcoin Trust, IBIT, or Bitwise Bitcoin ETF, BITB or ARK Bitcoin, that's Kathy Wood's program, ARKB, Fidelity Wise Original Bitcoin Fund, Invesco Galaxy Bitcoin, Van Eck Bitcoin, Valkyrie Bitcoin, Franklin Bitcoin. I used to work for Franklin Templeton.
It's become a full-fledged industry just looking at all the options that exist here.
Yeah, there's 11 of them that are out now. Most of them have account minimums that are affordable for the average person. And so
it's like $100 on some, $10 on another one here.
That is something you can look into. And the fees that they charge range, but they all seem basically reasonable. Should you make that plunge? We're not telling you you should. We are not giving investment advice on this. But we do see a lot of exciting things happening in the Bitcoin industry. So, Mike, if you were to take that plunge, how would you do it?
And in an ETF?
Probably an ETF.
I would probably start with an ETF. I would probably pick the one that I think the brand that potentially I trust the most there, find out a little bit more about it, and then see if it makes sense. And I'd probably start with something relatively small, and I'm going to continue to focus on my core investments that I understand a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I'm not the investment guru. You're more the investment guru. How would you approach it?
Well, here's the quote from my battle plan. It says, bottom line, there are risks, and that's why you shouldn't go at this alone. You'll want and need professional advice. So you'll read up, learn as much as you can. That's why you want to get a copy of this economic battle plan that we did. It's 3 years old, but it's still relevant. Or a copy of the book Pirate Money, where we've got a whole chapter of the future of money and talks about how money operates and what you should do with it. And again, never giving advice, but just helping people learn.
Yeah, yeah. And Pirate Money is one of those that's easy to understand, though. I mean, for me, gold and silver has held value over time. We've talked about that multiple times in the show. But you've got a physical asset that I can see or that I can hold if I need to, or that's in the bullion depository and I've made it transactional through electronic technology. But if I wanted to see that it's there, I know it's there. If it's going to get cyber hacked, more than likely my gold is still in the vault out there. It's something that I can physically make sure that there's something there versus crypto is kind of vapor. I mean, it could get stolen and gone over the internet lines, and I don't know what happened to it.
You know, you go to a coffee shop and you'll see a Bitcoin ATM. And what you're doing is you put money in on a credit card and you can pull out something that references a little piece of the blockchain that you own, the Bitcoin on the blockchain. But there are not a lot of places that you can walk in and pay for stuff with Bitcoin now. Yeah. Bitcoin accepted here. A lot of places you walk in and it says MasterCard accepted here, right? Mm-hmm. And what's the advantage of at least... This is a proof of concept. We're not recommending it, but there's a company called Glint, and you were just with the CEO. Tell me what you know.
Yeah, well, you know, Glint is a technology that is both a payment platform and a trading platform. But basically, you can take part of your money, put it in a bullion depository, and I can spend my gold transactionally, electronically, anywhere I spend MasterCard. And that makes it simple and easy to understand for me. And it gives me a stable store of value that that I can buy and sell and exchange anywhere right now.
Absolutely not a cryptocurrency. That is the basis for the book that I wrote last year titled Pirate Money, Discovering the Founder's Hidden Plan for Economic Justice and Defeating the Great Reset. If you want more information on Pirate Money, you can go to piratemoneyradio.com for more information. Look, we're going to talk a little more about Bitcoin, blockchain, and the future of money when we come back from this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Well, the book Pirate Money, we're Pirate Money Radio, and that's where we got the name for our radio program. The book Pirate Money has chapter 2, The Future of Money. And the quote that's there, it's a brilliantly designed book, and you've got all the founders wearing eye patches to show that they were pirates. And here's a quote with Ben Franklin with an eye patch, but underneath it's a quote that says, "I try all things, I achieve what I can," Herman Melville from Moby Dick. Have you tried all things? Have you tried Bitcoin?
I've not tried Bitcoin, and there's a lot of foods I haven't tried either, but that doesn't mean they're not good things.
Yeah. Have you tried pirate money? Have you transacted
I have it? Tried pirate money, and that's something that I can personally share that I love. And I've seen the value of the gold in that account going up in value. It doesn't mean it's always going to do that, but I see a stable store of value. And I see something that's easy to transact with, and I see something that's basically a stable store of value. So it meets that criteria that we talked about. What is money out there?
Yeah.
Now, do I still, if I have my gold account, my dollar accounts, do I still see myself kind of holding on to my gold, not spending as much because I see it eventually ticking up a little bit here and the dollar I see dropping? Yeah, I tend to spend my dollars, keep my gold there for an emergency, but it's there if I need to spend it. I can spend it like that anywhere I spend. I can spend MasterCard.
Instantly. You don't have to then sell your gold and go get the money out. Yeah. Hey, remember that guy we talked to, that whistleblower that we talked to out of Argentina?
Yes.
What happened when he would get his dad got his paycheck.
Yeah, dad would get the paycheck, and they would run to the bank as quick as they could. He was a construction worker to cash that check. And then they'd run to the grocery store because everything at the grocery store that day was on sale compared to what it was going to cost the next day.
Yeah.
And when he saw what was available with transactional gold and silver, the ability to have that hedge against inflation, the ability to have a stable store value if something were to happen like that, and be able to walk into a grocery store and be able to buy at today's prices or basically tomorrow's prices if you own gold. Versus dollars where you're literally losing money every day on it potentially. He saw this as the answer and something he seriously wanted to see, was hoping we'd have success in the states we're working and more states out there.
Now, when we do this, we're using commercial capability, the one that I have been using, not recommending one over another. Mm-hmm. You'll look for yourself, do your own due diligence, but the one I've used is called Glint, and you go to Glint Pay. On an iPhone or an Android phone, download the app and you can put money in there that they convert to gold, and then you can spend that gold. And I remember going and buying a bag of oranges at a grocery store. It worked perfectly. I've paid for dinner there. We've been together and paid for dinner and so forth. But there's a downside to it. The downside is that if the value of your gold has gone up, that's not a bad thing. That's not a downside. It can go up. But if it has, then you have to calculate and pay a capital gains tax because mm-hmm. it's increased.
Now, if you're unfortunate to have that increase, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but there's an extra step you have to do in the tax records.
Just imagine, though, the amount of tax that would be paid. We said that 10,000 Bitcoin bought two medium-sized pizzas, and those two medium-sized pizzas in equivalent Bitcoin, would be something like $300 million a piece. Well, if you put $20 in and it became worth $300 million, you'll have a capital gain of nearly $300 million. And at the highest capital gains tax rate, you would be paying, potentially 100, because you'll be at the highest rate because you mm-hmm. got $300 million. If you spent that, cashed it in, you'd be paying $120 million or something, depending on your state, in tax. So Bitcoin is taxed as a collectible. Currently, pirate money, transactional gold and silver, isn't that taxed as a collectible too?
Well, it shouldn't be if we get these states to get this legislation done out there. So once it becomes functional money, because this is not a collectible, this is money, that gold that we can spend anywhere we spend MasterCard again. So I can buy things with this. I can pay my taxes with it. I can buy a stick of gum with it. I can pay potentially property taxes with it. All those things that we see fall within the IRS guidelines of functional currency. Now, that needs to be proven out still. But as we see more and more states starting to look at this and adopt this, and move through the legislative process, we see great potential for...
I've talked to some lawyers, I've talked to some tax people. The IRS code is very plain. They believe it highly likely. Nobody's given tax advice here. We don't do that. We don't give investment advice or tax advice, but it does seem reasonable that a case can be made under the IRS code and under the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, that transactional gold and silver, where gold and silver are at the heart of it, and you've got that ease of electronic transaction, that would not create a capital gains taxable event if the gold and silver maintain their purchasing power relative to the U.S. dollar over time. Bitcoin, not so much, and never can be so much. People ask me all the time, hey, Kevin, why do you advocate for states to adopt transactional gold and silver? Why don't you advocate for Bitcoin? That would be so easy. We'll just make Bitcoin legal tender in the states. Why don't states do that, Mike?
That's a simple answer. It's not in the Constitution. So Article 1, Section 10 allows two things, gold and silver. States can act gold and silver as legal tender. And so we want to stick within that constitutional state right.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the vulnerabilities to blockchain and Bitcoin. One of the serious concerns is governments do not like anyone touching their monopoly on money. And think about what I just said. The Federal Reserve has a monopoly on money. So by definition, every Federal Reserve note is monopoly money, which if you think about as a kid, that was a joke. Take those pink, orange, green, blue pieces of paper and go down to the store and buy something with them. They say, you can't buy anything with this. This is monopoly money. Well, literally, Federal Reserve notes are legal tender, but they are also monopoly money, and they've lost 90% of their value from 1971 to the present. So there's a serious concern there. But Bitcoin comes along, preserves its value, gives you privacy and anonymity, and it's this cool technology. Governments look at that and say, I'm not sure that we want people to be able to do that. Terrorists could do this. That's what Janet Yellen referenced. Mm-hmm. Terrorists and criminals could do this. So here it is. The federal government has been cracking down in a three-pronged assault. And I'm quoting from the book, Pirate Money, The Future of Money. Number one, they've gone after the providers, the crypto wallets, and the exchanges. Number two, they're preparing to classify Bitcoin and all cryptocurrencies as security, like a stock or bond or a commodity, like wheat or soybeans, and they don't treat it like money. And there's quotes to describe that. And number three, if the government doesn't outright kill cryptocurrency, it will absolutely take its pound of flesh in the form of taxes. Now, can the federal government, if a state makes transactional gold and silver available, can the federal government just crack down on it like they can crack down on Bitcoin?
Well, the federal government will do what the federal government wants to do, but I think they will have a more difficult time if they follow what the Constitution says, and as we see states working and standing together to say, hey, this is our right.
Ah, what the Constitution says. The federal government hasn't gotten a good track record recently on following the Constitution, except when the states have stood up and said, wait a minute, this is what the Constitution says, and they have gotten the courts siding with them. And the courts have sided with pirate money through the years, as documented in the book Pirate Money. Bottom line is whether the decision is Briscoe versus Bank of Kentucky, or the decision is Nebbia versus New York, or Lane County versus Oregon, or whatever, the courts seem to be behind the notion that states can't have their own money as long as it's gold and silver coin.
Yeah. Yeah. And let me just illustrate again what this looks like, Kevin. So I don't know, we have audience members tuning in and out as they're driving or carrying on with their day. But the ability to take part of your money, put it in a bullion depository backed by the state. In Texas, we have a bullion depository here. Other states are looking at it, or it might be a Brinks. But I just take simply dollars. I buy at spot price plus 0.05%, 0.005%. And I've got gold sitting in a vault. And that gold, I have a debit card that makes that gold electronically transactional, where I can spend that gold anywhere I spend MasterCard. So I can buy my lunch at Chick-fil-A, and it, less than 200 milliseconds, it'll say, how much gold does he have? Converts that to dollars and pays the retailer. Eventually, there'll be capabilities to go and do peer-to-peer where I can send gold directly to you. Would you take gold if I sent it to you directly, Kevin?
Oh, I would take gold, absolutely. Okay. If the people want to pay me in gold, I'd be happy to receive it in gold. And I'll pay everybody that I employ in gold. And I'll be happy to pay my mortgage in gold. Because if you know it can flow freely between gold and paper money, and you know you can get your gold back at any time, you can top it off or add to it or buy it, you know, over time, absolutely I want gold.
Yeah. And interesting is we talk about, you know, it's just another way to pay, like Venmo or Apple Pay or PayPal, but this is backed by gold and backed by a state. So it becomes a very, it's really what we call the pirate money clause that our founders put in the Constitution for such a time as this.
Yeah, no, I think it's got all the benefits and advantages of cryptocurrency in that it's a powerful new way to pay, but it's back to the future. It's not going entirely. It's going back to the future because it was put in the Constitution. All of the legal provisions, I believe, are there. And states, 25 of them now, are looking at enacting pirate money. So what are your takeaways on whether or not we should look at cryptocurrency or pirate money or whatever? I wrote down 9 of them, and I'll run through them very quickly. Number one, you ought to get educated on Bitcoin, other cryptocurrencies, blockchain, because they're here to stay. Number two, beware the mania. People get excited because they see it going up, and so they want to rush out and they want to buy some. Do due diligence. Get professional advice. Think through. Pray about it. Make wise decisions. The third thing is monitor the government's reactions, because if government shuts down Bitcoin and blockchain, then the people who've got it will be in serious trouble. Number four, watch the technology slowly revolutionize things. This is going far beyond just currency. The blockchain can keep track of your property records and all kinds of other things in a public ledger that's really powerful. Number five, get professional help if you want to make an investment. We're not recommending it, but if you do, you should get professional help. Number six, beware of central bank digital currencies and the threats to privacy and unlimited money. Number seven, check out pirate money. All the convenience, appropriate privacy, security, state issued, limited. Now, if you want more information, go to piratemoneyradio.com. Don't forget, send your questions to afr@piratemoneyradio.com. We're here to help you navigate the good, the bad, and the ugly of money through a biblical lens. Have a great new week, and praise God for his goodness.